This is SG2 Perspectives, a conversation with industry experts and SG2 thought leaders about the biggest trends in healthcare and what we all expect that's going to mean for the future of healthcare delivery.
We really need to think about what is going to be the long-term impact on commercial erosion in our market. We think some of these unemployment numbers and some of the commercial erosion could sustain into different marketplaces. Is that your market? And if it is, what do you need to do?
Welcome to SG2 Perspectives. Today, both Kelly and I get to play hosts and experts because we're going to be talking about a recent project that we worked on together with our colleagues, Mark Larson and Tori Ritchie, who are also joining us on the podcast. And it was around payer mix shift forecasting. This was such an important consequence of COVID-19 driven unemployment, as healthcare providers are so focused right now on short-term planning and thinking about volume and revenue recovery projections. So, Mark, you're our fearless leader here. This was really hard. Why did you sign us up for this? We're not economists. Yeah, SG2's core competency is healthcare demand forecasting, but this was a whole new set of assumptions and expertise. Why was understanding the forces that are going to impact payer mix shift so important for health systems right now?
Really, there were three main drivers that led us to developing the calculator. The first driver really was SG2 is all about understanding the future of healthcare and allowing strategists to really think about and anticipate what those futures are. Since the market is so riddled with uncertainty today, leaders really need to plan for different scenarios that the future COVID-19 may bring and the financial impact around that. That's not something we've had to do in the past, but really understanding what those financial impacts will be is going to be really critical from a strategy perspective, because we are seeing commercial payment erosion in the marketplace. The second reason was really that each market is unique in its makeup of workers and payer mix. We understood there was a need for a scenario model that would really could be applied, if you'd think about it, to local market labor dynamics. It's something that we thought was really important, and having, again, different scenarios around that, sensitivities to COVID-19 in your market. And then the third reason really was from past recessions, and intuitively, we kind of know that unemployment impacts commercial erosion. But COVID-19 really threw us a curveball. And if you will, it really has been a different kind of market disruptor. And SG2 believes we need to associate how a virus's trajectory will impact that. I mean, nobody knows what that trajectory will be like and what different scenarios look like. The model allows you to think through different scenarios. Very impactful overall.
So Kelly, we had to build this in steps. And the first big step and the first big unknown was what is going to happen with unemployment. You found some unemployment projections that we used in the model. What do we learn about historic drivers of unemployment, and what's making COVID-driven unemployment unique?
Just to give the audience a little bit of idea about how this was supposed to be used, what we were really going for here was putting together a short-term forecast of payer mix shift. The way that we approached this from an unemployment perspective was to forecast unemployment on a monthly basis for the next 18 months or so. And usually unemployment forecasts are a little bit longer term than that, but we were able to find some resources that did this on a shorter term basis based on COVID-19. So something important to keep in mind is we're looking this up. We are not economists. And so we were looking for projections that were put out by real economists, but also then keeping in mind that they are not epidemiologists and they're not healthcare people per se. We had the job of combining our expertise with theirs. What we ended up finding was the Cleveland Federal Reserve put out a pretty good forecast that they based on the blue chip survey of economists. They put out a number of different scenarios, and then they land on three separate curves, if you will, of unemployment. One of them is the baseline, where is sort of the consensus curve that everyone agreed is most likely. Then there's the pessimistic curve, which is sort of, if you're thinking about a roller coaster, you're going all the way up to the top and then waiting for a big drop, but it's a pretty big bummer because you're just plateauing for a while in terms of unemployment. It doesn't really go down. And then that pessimistic curve is really the thrilling screamer. You go up and then you drop down really quickly, which I'm sure is what we all hope is the case. I don't know if it will be or not. The baseline is somewhere a little bit in between. The unique thing about this unemployment projection compared to things in the past is that the pandemic doesn't really impact all industries equally. So the other thing that we did to localize the data regarding unemployment is that we used something called an economic vulnerability index, and that allowed us to look at each county individually and basically credit Chimura, who is the consulting firm think tank that came up with this index and this data at the county level. But what it did was it sort of weighted the COVID-19 impact on each county and their unemployment rate based on the mix of industries that they have. So for example, if you are Las Vegas and all of your employment is basically tied to the casinos and a lot of tourism, you're going to be impacted very highly versus if you're maybe in another place. I think Minneapolis was an example of a place that wasn't impacted as greatly, where you have a lot of knowledge-based jobs that are sort of tied to a pretty diverse economy. You're not going to be impacted as greatly. So these are kind of the things that were a little bit different compared to projecting unemployment in a normal world that is pre-COVID. But once we got to the point where we could create a localized unemployment scenario, the next task was to really translate the change in unemployment to a shift in lives across payer classes. And that's where a lot of the thinking came in around the mechanics of things like furloughs. And I know, Trevor, you did a lot of that work. So can you tell us a little bit more about how we incorporated those factors into our unemployment forecasting?
Yeah, furloughs are one of the things that make COVID-driven unemployment so unique. Furloughs becomes kind of a blanket term for employees and employers' expectation that a lot of the layoffs were temporary. So for our definition of furloughs, we're expecting that that means employers are furloughing employees, aka not paying salaries, but maintaining their benefits. That probably is not the case in every situation, but globally, that's the expectation from the model's perspective. And so we give some flexibility within the tool to adjust that around the national average, which Washington Post survey and CNBC survey showed is about 50% of all those people seeking unemployment in March and April, the big spike in unemployment. It was people who were furloughed and people who were expecting that their temporary unemployment situation, they were going to return to work. And so what that really means for thinking about payer mix shift and thinking about the loss of commercial insurance is that the peak in unemployment is not going to correspond to an immediate peak in the loss of commercial insurance. The loss of commercial insurance is going to be delayed. We still haven't seen that yet. And talking to payers, they haven't seen a big increase in commercial terminations or a big change in enrollment for commercial yet. And that's because furloughs are delaying it. Hopefully those employers will be able to bring the employees back, but we're probably not going to know until the end of the summer and into the fall. And furloughs in the case of this model also becomes kind of a blanket for the fact that employers who got laid off have COBRA. You have 2 months to enroll and it's retroactive. So the expectation is many wait, see if you have a big healthcare expense and then enroll. So all that stuff gets kind of rolled up into this idea that we need to think about the timing that the impact of unemployment really hits commercial insurance.
So we're seeing a ton of local variation that will be driving changes in unemployment. And at the end of the day, that's all really tied back to the behavior of the virus. So that was the real challenge here, because there isn't existing data out there that's showing the one-to-one relationship between the behavior of the virus and how it affects the economy. At SG2, though, we have put together a number of other tools. We're predicting surges for hospitals. We're predicting a short-term forecast so that hospitals can sort of understand what's going on in terms of demand in the next 18 months or so. Tori worked with us to work across these different tools. Tori, help us understand better the scenarios that we put in place for future resurgences and how we're connecting the different SG2 tools.
We worked closely with colleagues developing other COVID-19 models and ultimately incorporated 7 resurgence scenarios that span summer 2020 through the end of 2021. These scenarios determine what the case resurgence is going to look like, spanning from steady state, where there's no resurgence between now and the end of 2021, to scenarios where you see a reopening resurgence and then another in the fall and winter of varying degrees. So a mild and a strong scenario there. We have two scenarios that just look at a fall and winter 2020 resurgence with both that strong and that mild resurgence. And then we have two cyclic resurgence scenarios where either from a mild or strong perspective, those cases are surging over each season. So every 3 months, you see another spike in case count. We wanted to incorporate that, but then also give users the ability to dictate how severely unemployment will be affected by case resurgence. Because we understand in every market, that's going to look different. We recognize that based on the local industry mix, you might have a more moderate unemployment impact with case resurgence, and you might have no impact at all. So we provided three different options you could choose, and we default users to either a severe, moderate, or no impact scenario. That way, you don't see a depletion of your commercial population if, based on your local industry mix, it's unlikely that the economy will be affected by COVID case resurgence.
And we're really using that economic vulnerability index to set organizations to a default based on the mix of industries that they have. And it's all related to that economic vulnerability index that I talked about earlier from Chimura, correct?
That's exactly right. So we provide a suggestion, but you are by no means locked into using our suggestion. We just want to give you a starting point. And then from there, you can either play up or taper the effect based on your local knowledge.
Yeah. So taking that one step further, right? How are those spikes in unemployment going to correspond to local economic shutdowns and resulting unemployment? That's a huge unknown right now. But based on the data we have so far, and we're just starting to see this in some of the places where COVID is surging right now, Kelly, how do we expect local governments and businesses to respond as COVID resurges?
Yeah, Trevor, and I think that this was probably one of the largest challenges with doing this model is that we don't have any modern examples really or data on how governments are going to react to a situation like this. All we have is what happened in the spring. And what we can see so far, based on the way that local governments are responding to the fact that cases are kind of continuing to go up, but they're really trying to still open up, is that governments are probably going to avoid shutdown in the future at any cost. The one point I think that we can probably anchor to is that if hospitals start hitting capacity, that may be when we start seeing another shutdown. That would be the point at which there might be some pressure on them to really pull back on some of these openings and start to implement the restrictions again. However, there's probably a couple of reasons that that maybe sort of a muted impact compared to what happened originally. So first, doctors are learning more and more how to treat this virus. There's no cure for it, obviously, but they're learning how to manage it a little bit better, how to get patients in and out of the ICU a little bit quicker and more effectively. Secondly, systems are better prepared to sort of run these two parallel tracks of elective procedures versus this COVID-19 clinical unit. Usually it's separated from the others. And they're able to do that a little bit better, we think, just because it was so financially devastating for them to completely halt elective procedures. We'll see more creative solutions to keeping these two tracks open. And then finally, we're continuing to learn a little bit more about transmission. Previously, you know, we hadn't known really whether it was spread through surfaces or airborne. And we're starting to get a little more clarity on that and understanding that wearing masks, for example, appears to be pretty effective in reducing spread. So there are a number of things that are probably going to be put in place that will allow not only health systems, but also just the general economy and businesses throughout the economy to figure out ways to be creative in living with the virus and staying open instead of just the blunt tool of shutting everything down.
Yeah, that's fair. You know, in talking to others and in reading some bigger projections, like the St. Louis Fed conducted a survey of business owners, And they said their top barrier to returning to pre-COVID business levels was consumer confidence, not really government regulation. How is consumer confidence going to really end up being a huge driver of the pace the economy can recover?
It's really, I think, the number one financial impact that the hospitals are seeing today, clearly, and they're seeing that volume drops. But, you know, the good news is that consumers, through education that hospitals, health systems, and public health resources are providing, are starting to get a little bit more acclimated about where are safe areas, where aren't safe areas, and then how hospitals and health systems are doing a good job of protecting consumers. We really think that that's going to be that communication and the revisions to that and the consumer's experience once they go into the healthcare facility is going to be a huge piece. In fact, we recently did a revised consumer survey, and we've seen incredible increases actually of consumers being more willing to enter the hospital environment. Still very reluctant to go into the emergency department. That's one area that we still have some work to do, but certainly for surgeries and elective surgeries, they're much more comfortable going into those venues. And we've seen the resulting volumes increase, which is very positive news. We hope this continues into the future, but I think we can't really let up. We have to continue to do the communication and execute on our strategies of keeping consumers safe in our environments.
But I think at this point, we've really focused on economic recovery. And now there's this aspect of the tool that was really, once we've established this economic recovery, how does that impact payer mix shift? Tori, what are some of the factors that could contribute to changes in payer mix?
You could make the case that Medicaid enrollment will increase due to the Family First Act. Same with the exchanges. We've seen an increase in enrollment, particularly for the healthcare.gov exchanges. So we took all of those things into consideration in distributing the population across payer classes. But ultimately, we think that enrollment based on that unemployment change will be based on the local employment mix. So what we mean by that is historically, where the population enrolled in payer classes, be that the exchanges, Medicaid, uninsured, they're likely going to follow a similar trend when they lose their employment and thus their healthcare insurance. So we leveraged SG2's insurance coverage forecast, which is an insurance tool that we've had for a number of years, to really determine at that local county level what that distribution looks like based on the health of the exchanges within that county and whether or not the state had expanded Medicaid, which then would push larger proportions of those populations towards those particular payer buckets versus remaining uninsured.
Yeah. And so far, that syncs with what we're hearing from payers. We've heard Medicaid enrollment up 8 to 10%. And that was mostly first thing in March and early April. Payers knew that this was going to be a vulnerable population. They did a big enrollment push. And at the same time, because of Family First Act, like Tori mentioned, it's harder to lose Medicaid coverage. We've heard modest anecdotal evidence about exchange products. And the thing that's surprising so far, but syncs with the idea that furloughs and other factors are delaying the loss of commercial insurance. Payers aren't reporting big terminations of commercial enrollment, big drops in their enrollment numbers yet. So that's going to have to be a wait and see. Overall, that's fantastic news. And it largely syncs with what the model will show so far. All right. So last question, Mark, help us put a bow on this and really answer the big question, which is, so what? What should health systems do? We can give them this data about how insurance coverage is going to shift in their market. But if you're a strategic planner at a health system, what should you do about it?
So that's the million-dollar question here, and maybe multi-million-dollar question, depending on the impact in your market. And Trevor, I think the first thing is certainly just get a feel for what those scenarios look like in your marketplace. Our tool can certainly help you with that and really building those different scenarios and trying to think about what could that mean in the market if we see unemployment, you know, surge due to two incremental COVID resurgences? Or what if we're just steady state and we're moving forward? What are the strategies that we may have to implement there as well? First of all, today, just, you know, get a good feel for what this commercial erosion could look like and what those different scenarios are. I think over the next couple of years, prepare for the increased competition for commercially covered lives in your market. When we modeled, there were ranges anywhere from 1% to 4% commercial percentage point commercial erosion in the marketplace. That's pretty significant when we were looking at earlier just Medicare eroding a commercial coverage by 1% annually. So this could be a big impact on your market. Competitors are also going to be squeezed by this as well. So we're going to be competing for fewer lives in the future. And then really evaluating what are those short-term solutions to reduce the impact on your net revenue. You may have to think about service realignment. You may have to think about different costs cutting strategies. But again, seeing those scenarios and what could happen, what is most likely to happen in your market and planning ahead over the next couple of years as we adapt to COVID-19 is important. And then finally, evolving beyond traditional care models in the future, beyond this COVID-19 impact, we really need to think about what is going to be the long-term impact on commercial erosion in our market. We think some of these unemployment numbers and some of the commercial erosion could sustain in the different marketplaces. Is that your market? And if it is, what do you need to do? Are there some opportunities to establish long-term service line rationalization strategies, thinking about where you provide care across your service line? And then also thinking, are there some social determinants of health strategies to ensure patients are proactively treated more upfront, and different partnerships that you can have with different community providers to ensure that happens? So really thinking about those strategies and how is that relating back to that commercial erosion and increases in Medicaid and potentially uninsured in your marketplace. What are you going to do to really mitigate that overall financial impact to your hospital, but still provide those valuable services to employees and consumers in your marketplace? So I think those are the big three things, Trevor, and we're certainly here at SG2 to work through those scenarios with you.
Like you said, the million-dollar question. So thanks for taking a swing at it. And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. For us, this was a fun opportunity to get this team back together. We've spent a lot of time together in the last 2 months. And so it was fun for me to get back together with everyone. I always recommend subscribing or following the podcast if you enjoy it. And you can also tune in to another Vizient podcast, The Modern Practice. It's on Vizient's Medical Leadership Channel. And provides a clinical perspective into current issues affecting healthcare today.
This has been another great episode of SG2 Perspectives, where industry experts and SG2 thought leaders explore the drivers of tomorrow's healthcare strategies to inform today's decision makers. Contact us anytime by sending an email to sg2perspectives@sg2.com. We'd love to hear from you. SG2 revolutionized healthcare demand forecasting with the Impact of Change forecast, and today we're the industry's premier strategy advisory firm. To learn more, visit sg2.com. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you again soon.